folks. Welcome back. Thank you for tuning in today. Today we're going to have a quick update with David Icke on the Rotherham situation, the pedophile network there, and the wonders of multiculturalism. Please stay with us. We'll have much more to discuss. Our websites, redicecreations.com and redicemembers.com, has a lot more programs for you. Please check it out. All right, let's get started. Welcome back, David. Thank you so much for joining us today. It's good to have you here.
Thanks, Henrik.
Now, we have only a short segment here with you today, so let's just kind of shoot the sacred cow right away and get to the heart of the matter. The lives of 1,400 young white British girls, in some cases teenagers in Rotherham here, have been sacrificed on the altar of political correctness, really, and the gigantic multicultural lie. And we did kind of allude to some of this actually last time you were on with us, David, and it's interesting, just one of these cases kind of pops its head out, its ugly head, right after we've been speaking about some of this. I mean, it's amazing that it took 11 years before this story finally came out, despite warnings as far back as 2003. And I'm not sure there's, any other cases like that in terms of how known it was and how many actually people within government and positions of leadership that were talking about it, despite it's not been done. I mean, we've talked certainly about some of the pedophile rings and everything else many, many times with you on the show, David. So it's not that we don't know that it's going on, but I think that this is unique for the cases that we have police, we have people within official, settings of authority and government that have actually known about it, but intentionally, cover it up. It's a protection of one of the most horrible crimes you can imagine for the sake of not rocking, the boat that we find ourselves in Europe right now. And it's being covered up because it shows the faults of the system that's been, pushed on us by the policies by government that has been forceful upon, the British people, among others, But what do you make of the case? What's your analysis of it? I certainly have a lot of comments to make about it, but, it's been known for a long time, but again, due to the issues at hand in terms of the Pakistani Muslim background of these gangs, they call them Asian gangs in the media, as it's been coming out. How do you view this situation, David?
Well, a few things really, Henrik. First of all, just putting aside the ethnic nature of most of the perpetrators, it's a classic situation that I've found all over the world. Child abuse goes on. We know that. But what people don't realize, although they're starting to get a tiny inkling of it with all the things that have come out in recent times, they're not aware of the scale of it. Because if they think that fantastic as it is, certainly in this country, particularly for all the pedophile stories and revelations that have come out in recent years, if they think that they're anywhere close to the scale of it, then they're kidding themselves. The scale is fantastic, and there is very deep in the rabbit hole reasons for it. But you have the child abuse, but classically, in this case and every other case, you have the cover-up. Because these pedophile rings, they go into the heart of the establishment all over the world, in country after country after country. And thus the establishment protects the perpetrators. And they do it when they're pedophile politicians, of which we have legion, not least in Britain and America, but elsewhere too. And that's clearly being covered up. I mean, we're supposed to have had an inquiry into great revelations about political pedophilia. And you may remember they appointed a lady called Baroness Butler Sloss, who turned out to be the sister of one of the people in the past as Attorney General who covered up political pedophilia. And they wanted to appoint her to investigate what her brother had done. Right. I mean, it was such a joke, but such a classic case of, okay, it's coming out. What do we do? I know. Let's have an inquiry. Usual thing. We'll have an inquiry and we'll make it go nowhere. And what's happened with that is that, nothing's happened with that because they can't find someone at the moment to head the inquiry who will cover up the truth while being credible to the public. And so they're basically at the moment doing nothing and hoping that it will all go away and we'll forget about it. So this is classic, the child abuse and the cover up, they're hand in hand. And of course, when you have a pyramidal structure, it means that those with the power dictate down the structure and dictate who is investigated and who isn't. Therefore, the police on the ground on one level would have been told to back off. I mean, you're absolutely right. So many people knew about it. The cover-up had to be systematic. And it's said, and there will be truth in this, that they didn't go there for political correctness because of the Asian nature of most of the perpetrators. And that's absolutely right, because political correctness is now a disease. But yes, it's also the fact that these things are systematically covered up for other reasons, whether they are white males or whatever. But in terms of the political correctness, this is something that is fundamental to the loss of freedom of expression, because what they've done is create a situation where it's politically incorrect for you to say that about him, and for him to say that about her, and for her to say that about them. And that means that they've created a structure in which the target population is policing itself. I'm policing you because I'm saying that's politically incorrect for you to say that to me. He's policing me because he's saying it's politically incorrect for me to say that to him. And this is exactly how it was supposed to be. And we know from even admissions from the Blair administration that they systematically open the door to as many people from overseas as possible during that period to, in their words, change the face of British society. And when you're doing that, when that's your goal, then you are going to obviously, as an establishment, seek to hide the consequences of that as much as you can. This is an example of it, where at least some of the police anyway and the authorities claim they were frightened to go for it because they would be seen as politically incorrect and going for a minority group, and therefore it wouldn't be seen in a good light. My antidote to political correctness is it true? And if it is, say it. Is it happening? Yeah. If it is, expose it. I don't care whether they're black, white, or sky blue, bloody pink, or something in the middle. It's about the truth of what's going on. But what political correctness does is stop you doing that, stop you telling the truth, and start to censor yourself.
Definitely. I mean, look at this is the lie of the minority issue as well. There are 186 million people in Pakistan. I know they're not all Pakistani, but let's face it, on the earth, they're not a minority. In this case, the British people are actually underrepresented in that case. So it's kind of how you view it, in what perspective. Sometimes it's beneficial for them to look at it from a global point of view, and otherwise it's kind of beneficial to look at a local view or on a nation at large. But the fact is that the case, I think, is unique for a couple of different reasons. It's that the perpetrators are primarily Muslim in this case, Muslim men, and the girls are white British. And because if this wasn't the case, if they weren't targeted on racial basis, which they refused to kind of look at, in an area where they were in, where they are over representations of the Pakistani community, for example, they would be an equal divide among the different races. But it was 90-95% of the girls that were abused were young, girls and teenagers of white British descent, right? So it's just the idea that they don't dare to call a spade and to recognize it for what it is. And that's what's really is bugging me about this case as well,
Well, yeah, I mean, the term racism is thrown off in all directions. But again, all I'm asking for is equality, for fairness, for balance, for it.
I agree, me
too. For it being the same for all. But it's not the same for all, because if you are in a classified minority, you can say things about other people that are not prosecuted. But you, if it's in reverse, then there are prosecutions. Then that is a society that is unequal. I don't care if it's bias towards the majority or bias towards the minorities. It's equally wrong. We need every case to be on its merits, every situation to be judged on its merits. And when something is happening, no matter who's doing it, it needs to be exposed. Because you see, I don't see in Rotherham, this is where I come from as a human being. I don't see Pakistani people or from the Pakistani descended people as you know, people of Pakistani origin abusing children. I see children being abused by psychopaths, and every community, every culture, white, black again, or sky blue, pink, has its as I was going to say, fair share of psychopaths. But the more I study this, because it's so important to understanding the nature of the world and how it works, the number of people who would classify for the definition psychopath in this world is stunning. People think that psychopaths go around, you know, and they're serial killers and those kind of people. That's the extreme psychopath. The treatment of these girls was by extreme psychopaths. But there are psychopathic people and psychopathic behavior all the way through society at different levels. Sure. And the key to the psychopath is lack of empathy. Now, every single color, culture, creed has the capacity for psychopathic lack of empathy. And that's what we've seen here. I mean, you know, there are people of Pakistani descent that will be as absolutely appalled at what's happened there as anyone else will. And we shouldn't, you know, dub the everyone with the behavior of the psychopathic element. And every society, like I says, has that. But what's the key here is that even though they're psychopaths, even though they did what they did, and my goodness me, it'll still be going on. I have no question about that. You can't, they didn't expose it. And one of the reasons that stopped them from doing that was fear of being called racist or oppressing minorities. And this political yeah. correctness is a massive form of collective mind control. And it is a disease. It is a virus that's overtaking human society.
I heard from there's a number of interesting kind of aspects to these kinds of cases as well, and I think it speaks to a lot of what is, you know, how kind of the face of Europe is changing right now, and Britain as well. I mean, as you said, going back to how the immigration laws changed, and they did this for very, you know, specific purposes, and I think anyone who's been watching, you know, the conspiracies that you know, a lot of people like yourself, David, have been covering over the years would do good in bringing in this kind of issue into the picture as well, because it's as much, if not more, part of it as everything else that we've been talking about. I mean, I heard from a listener who had some friends within the black community of one, I forget the city now in England, but anyway, there was an encouragement there within the kind of the gang environment to have them actually convert to Islam. It was run by Serco, one of the you know, private prisons in England. And we have, for example, another case in America, what is known as Prislam, where in the prison environment, you know, the gangs and everyone else who comes into that environment and you know, largely among the blacks in America, they're encouraged to convert to Islam, because some of these questions have been raised in the UK, for example, now, why there are a breeding ground for ISIS, and why there's so many people going from England and, you know, ending up fighting on, you know, either for ISIS or against ISIS. We've had this in, you know, in Germany and France and Sweden and Norway too now, a lot of people, right, you know, outpouring from those countries, you know. So it's like it's something is occurring. From the establishment point of view, this is a conspiracy of government enforced issues of creating, you know, conflict and issues of you know, cultural clashes, basically, on this level. I fear for what is coming on this issue if they manage to fully bloom out this this plan that they have for us, you know?
Well, we go back here, Henrik, to the big picture, of what you need to do when the few wish to control the many on the scale that this few wish to control the many. And that is, you have to divide and rule them. You cannot control a united population. It is just not enough of you, and there's too many of them. So what we're seeing all over the world and in different expressions, but all part of this same whole, this same web, is divide and rule. So what I think when we chatted last time, the reason they're dropping the borders all over the world, not least in Europe, but of course in America too, is because mm-hmm. they want to break up any sense of nationhood so that there yeah. will be a massive dilution of the sense of nationhood, the sense of culture, which will dramatically reduce the challenge and resistance to the plan to end all countries and break them up into merely regions of a global fascist state. And part of that divide and rule is to play different parts of the community, different cultures, different ethnic backgrounds off against each other. And the greatest way to divide and rule a population is to get them frightened of each other, because then that really divides more than anything else. So when you look at what's happening with ISIS, the ISIS story is on one level about the attacks and the horrific happenings as a result of ISIS taking over more and more of Iraq and Syria, yes. But the sub-story all along, if you watch, has been, yes, but it's not happening there, i.e. where you're not. It's going to happen here. I see the Saudis today. The Saudi king has come out and said a month from now they'll be in Europe, and a month after that they'll be in America. I mean, you're funding right. them, you hypocrite, yeah, you bloody exactly. liar. And so this is another part of that. Frighten them at home. Then what happens? Then you get the non-Muslim populations of these countries in fear of Muslims. You know, it's the same principle as on immediately after 9/11. Anyone with a brown face in America, they didn't have to be a Muslim or from a Muslim country. They just needed a brown face, and they were being targeted, and some of them were killed. And it's like, this is the background to this. Once you demonize Muslims by the few, they're terrorists, they're ISIS. Look what they're doing. They're beheading people and all this. Actually, the Saudis do that, as I recall. And once that happens, people do not, in vast numbers, they're not discerning. They see a Muslim. To them, there's a very good possibility in their mind, hey, are they one of these ISIS people? And so you have people frightened of each other, people suspicious of each other. This is exactly what any tyranny wants, to divide and rule the population. And I say this as, you know, as much to ethnic minorities in Britain, America, and elsewhere, as I say to white people in these countries. You know, if we don't come together and start to realize that we're all being played like a violin in this situation, and we put down the fault lines of religion and hatred, I mean, it's almost funny, it's tragic, but it's almost funny in an ironic way, that you have these extreme ISIS people and people going to join them, jihad and all that, who are doing these horrific things because they're anti-Western, and yet the Western countries created them, trained them, armed them, funded them through...
Well, exactly. That's what I've been questioning, is like, why are these people so stupid to fall into this trap of how they're being used? And look at how Israel is using the situation and all the other, you know, the Zionist forces that seek to undermine the West and everything. I mean, everyone is, they're using them in this case, but yet they're kind of falling in line. And I mean, let's face it, I'm not saying it doesn't matter what the origins or the roots of this question is. Of course it is. It's one of the most fundamental bits of it, right? But at the same time, to the people of on the streets of Britain or Sweden or what have you, it doesn't matter who's ultimately running the things for them in that moment. If they are being, you know, threatened, if there is a real viable possibility that, you know, they are being targeted because they're Christian or because, you know, they're Western European or whatever, that's a reality that they have to face. And it doesn't matter at that moment for them, you know, who's funding them or what's going on. The threat is real and it's going to be in their face. And so, I mean, since 1965, in about 50 years, that the face of Britain has changed on such a monumental scale and cultures have been forced into each other to clash in this capacity. And there hasn't been a decision from the population in this matter. So the question is here, of course, if this is something that has been forced upon Britain, I can understand their complete outrage about the situation as well, of having it changed in this capacity. And I believe it's for one, it's to create these kinds of conditions of conflict and infighting that we're going to see and we are beginning to see right
exactly.
now.
Exactly. This is exactly what they want. In short, they want to bring the Middle East to Europe and to America. When I say the Middle East, I mean what's been happening there for generations. Because if they can get the population in all its colors and creeds and backgrounds and beliefs at war with itself, then their job of controlling the whole is a piece of cake. What their worst nightmare is unity. Their worst nightmare is the Jew and the Muslim and the Christian to come together and say, don't agree on many things, but hey, we're all being targeted here. So we need to come together to meet this challenge. They're terrified of that. And thus, the very fabric of their manipulation of society is dividing and rule and playing different aspects of society off against each other. Now, so what you'll get now is where I'm seeing it anyway, is that you've got this happening in Rotherham with the child abuse. And now, of course, there are vast numbers of people from the same ethnic background as the perpetrators who wouldn't dream of harming a child. But now they're going to be tarred in the collective mind with them. And so there are many aspects of this. It's not just that political correctness has stopped horrifically and outrageously the arresting and the ending of this, the horror in Rotherham. And my goodness, Rotherham is in the news now, but it's happening everywhere. It's not only that, it's that you then reevaluate in the collective mind that these people, they do that. But white people do that, you know? And it's playing one off against the other. All white people are racist. Well, they're bloody not, you know? It's America. No, it's not America. It's the government of America. In fact, it's the global cabal that controls America and the puppets of that cabal. That's who's doing it. And so you talk about the stupidity of these people who are joining a jihad controlled by the people they're having jihad against. I mean, you couldn't exactly. make it up. Yeah. But yeah. We, you know, after a quarter of a century of this, and indeed, you know, 62 years of life on this planet in this reality, you cannot overestimate the capacity for stupidity among significant large tracts of humanity, because they've never left the crib mentally and emotionally. Because their minds were hijacked straight out of the womb by religions and parents and governments and schools and media. And they've never probably had a thought of their own in their entire lives. You know, it's like, you know, you talk to troops and you see interviews with troops who've been in the army all their adult lives. And when they come out, they don't know what to do because no one's telling them what to do anymore. They've got to think for themselves. A lot of them can't do it. And in the same way, these people, if you come from an extreme Muslim background or an extreme religious background of any kind, the indoctrination is there from the moment you enter this world. And the religion is dictating what you think, what you do, where you go, what you say, what you don't say, who you like, who you don't like, who you oppose, who you support. And these people have got no mind of their own to free think and to filter information. And thus they're just pawns of the most extreme kind in a game. That's what you're dealing with. It's like dealing with a wall. It's like having a conversation with a wall. You can't, because there's nothing coming back. There's nothing to come back, and so they have created these mindless people in all areas. I mean, you meet the extreme Christians in America, mate, as you will have done. I mean, you can't have a conversation with them, because the all you get back is the program. And so we come back in the end, and it can be quite depressing when you think that this is what we come back to if we're going to sort this out. We come back to people becoming conscious beyond the program. And if enough don't in significant numbers, then this program is going to go on, and the consequences of the program are going to go on. Because, you know, the people behind ISIS cannot create that organization, and they cannot direct that organization without the people joining it. It's the same with all of them, and so we are in a situation where, in bringing it down to basic terms, we're looking at the program, and we're looking at consciousness beyond the program. And if we go the way it's going in terms of world events at the moment, if people don't wake up in the light of what they're seeing, then what the heck is going to wake them up? It all comes down to this, you know, are people going to stay with the program? Are they going to break out of the program? And if enough don't, then we're in for some challenging times, well beyond anything we're even being challenged with now. And that's enough.
Well, exactly. And I think, as many problems as we do face, this is my quirk in the situation here. We talked about this last time as well. I love other cultures. I love the expression of the differences that we see around us. I object to globalism, to create a monoculture out of everything. And this is something that I believe is actually, in the long term, is slated to occur. In the short term, of course, you're going to get a kind of a hardening, if you will, of the pockets or cliques that exist, for understandable reasons. Because, I mean, as difficult it has been, you know, with our own people, you know, David, in this case, in terms of how we're struggling politically and everything, and that we haven't sorted things out. And I mean, the enforcement of bringing other cultures, and it doesn't mean that you hate those cultures, nothing about that. It's about the idea of having them forcefully brought to your doorstep, where language could be a barrier, simple things as cultural expressions of just recognizing the fact that, yes, there are differences. We've developed on different parts of the world for many thousands of generations in some cases, and to just uproot people like that and put them right next to each other and expect everything is going to be in complete perfect harmony, like some huge, you know, Coca-Cola advert or something like that. That's ridiculous, you know, and that's not what it is. It's a fat, huge multicultural lie that we're staring in the face right now. And the fact is that people have to recognize that it's nothing to do. I believe that if there was to be civility and if there was to be, you know, peace among people, well, let's at least do this on a voluntary basis first. But that's not how this is occurring, you know, and that's why I object to it in the capacity that it has occurred. And it doesn't mean that we can't help other people. It doesn't mean that you can help those people in who are in, you know, in need or everything else, or running from conditions which, you know, that the country need to, you know, deal with or clear up or whatever. But it's so screaming obvious that this is the kind of conditions that they wanted to create. And of course, the more they refuse to recognize something, you know, the more they put the lid on, this is going to exacerbate the problem further. And even the very idea that the bobbies who were into some of these houses here in Rotherham and decided to arrest the young girl who were hiding under the bed For being, disorderly and drunk, as opposed to, going for the groups of men that have actually raped and abused this poor girl. I mean, that is something that's going to create this anger, and I understand it, in this case, because it's like, why is this happening, and why is it not recognized? All these people we had, I think it was the Children's Commissioner Sue Berlewitz. She was like, she said, vehemently refused to look at the statistics of the case and to recognize it, despite, as I said before, we had a lady called Anne Cryer. I think she was the Labour MP for Kylie, I guess. I'm not sure if that's a political affiliation or a city or something like that, but she was the first to raise the alarm back in 2003. And if it would have been recognized at that point and faced head on, taking the bull by the horns and realized, all right, this is what it is, let's deal with it. No, we're tiptoeing around the issue. We're trying to cover it up because it's sensitive, because it is, on a basis of ethnicity. And that's why this is so difficult for them. And this is going to serve them, of course, very well at the end. But as we know, for us now, it's going to create more chaos and problems. So, there's huge problems. But the fact is that it isn't like a huge Coca-Cola advert. That's what we've been sold. But the reality is quite different.
Yeah, it was, of course, planned to be like that because the outcome was known. Now a lot of different ethnic backgrounds get on very well, but a lot of them don't. And if you are a manipulator of society, one of the ground rules is the golden rules is keep it simple. Keep it simple. Don't make it complicated because they won't get it. Keep it simple. I mean, people like Hitler said that, just keep it simple. And you see like collective mass mind control manuals always say, keep it simple. So when you bring different cultures into the same area, the same arena, and you do it by introducing very, very large numbers of cultures coming in from abroad, from outside, you are creating something very simple. They have a different color to you. They have a different culture to you. They have different, often different clothes to you. They're clearly different. You don't have to, work it out. They're not the same as you. They are the same as you in terms of their consciousness and they're human beings, but there's you can see the differences. That's what I'm saying. It's a bit like a football match. You have two teams in a football match. They've got different colored shirts on. You know which is one side and which is the other. And so by keeping it like that and creating it like that, they've created very clear potential to divide and rule the populations. And so they manipulate both sides. There's no reason if we go to a level of consciousness beyond the program that people of different cultures and different backgrounds and colors and creeds can't live in the same area and get on. But we're dealing with people from the program overwhelmingly. And that seems to be a difficult because the program doesn't see the world in unity. It sees it in parts. And thus they represent one part, they represent another part. And so you have incredible potential to play the different perceived parts off against each other. Whereas if we could get to a level of awareness that said, who am I? I am infinite consciousness, having an experience as a Pakistani, having an experience as a middle-class American, then we can start to realize that we're all one, having different experiences. But because the experience is the level that the program works on, i.e. the experience is what you are, and this is different experiences what you are. If we only hold ourselves in that level of awareness, then the potential for what is happening is infinite. Even in the extreme ways that we're seeing with this ISIS outrage, with people leaving families that actually often in Britain, families that don't actually support ISIS and just going out there and fighting for them. I mean, that's a form of insanity. And, I don't know about you, Henrik, but I'm seeing a very clear distinction becoming more and more blatant. At the fork in the road, I'm seeing people waking up, different levels of waking up, and in more and more numbers. but I'm also seeing other people going deeper and deeper and deeper into the program to the point where you cannot see any thought, any perceptions that actually are coming from the person themselves. They're all coming from the program. I'm seeing it getting worse and I'm seeing it getting better. It really is a parting of the ways. And that means it's going to be a very bumpy ride in the next few years. And indeed, we're now entering the point, I think, Henrik, I've said this for a long, long time, actually, between now and 2016, 17, possibly 18, where the future of this reality for a long time to come is going to be decided.
Yeah, that might very well be. I mean, I always like to look at the situation in reverse as well. You know, in I know about the big picture and everything else, but I mean, I've really tried to connect with my culture and heritage in the last few years. Look at, for example, my native religion and tradition that was in place before Christianity was imposed upon, you know, the Nordic people and all that kind of things. And I've realized that there is a rich, you know, very important tradition there, something that does connect with you on a deep, deep level. This is something that has been part of your cultural makeup for, you know, many, many thousands of generations. I think, you know, to let that go and to just kind of drop that. And I mean, again, it's for me, I know other people aren't like that on that page. They have the ability to, you know, kind of completely zoom out from that level and live, you know, on a much, you know, kind of ethereal level to things, if you will. I appreciate the fact of trying to kind of ground you to the earth a bit and realize that there is a value and a deep, rich culture and heritage that is part of any people, wherever they are in the world, right? And that's something that I've become to appreciate, you know? And I think that I wonder how other cultures around the world would react, because I was like to look at it in reverse, because there's been kind of a supplanting, I guess, of specifically European culture, but, you know, the British people have experienced this as well, who has a long, you know, Anglo-Saxon history. There's been, you know, Celtic traditions there. And I mean, all the cultural background that have built the massive amount of standing stones and, you know, dolmens and, you know, passage graves and all this wonderful stuff, fantastic art and expressions of culture that should be recognized as anyone else around the world, you know? And that's something which seems to be kind of, is something that's been brushed to the side almost. And I think it's very a shame when that's occurring. I mean, how would the other cultures, let's say, react if millions of British people, you know, poured into Pakistan and, you know, set up their fish and chips shops there, building churches with church bells. And I'm just wondering, would there be tolerance? Is it, you know, would there be an okay attitude towards, you know, the British? Because I think it seems there is like a devoid of cultural basis in the Western world. And I think that this is what's led actually to a lot of problems. And Christianization can certainly be part of that too. But this idea of it's universalism in these countries, but in all the other ones, they still have their, you know, wonderful rooted traditions and culture, which kind of bounds them to the land. It bounds them to their own people and whatnot. But in the West, it's like a blank slate and everything can come in there. So it's like, it's everything and kind of nothing at the same time. And I think that rootlessness that's created is something that is partially, you know, kind of at fault of what we're seeing right now. It's the place where they've decided to begin the globalization experiment, whether they have the plan, of course, to pull this on every, you know, country in the world. I think we know that, but they've chosen to do it here for specific reasons, partially because I think the resistance, a lot of the resistance lie within, you know, some of these countries as well. But yeah, how do you view that, David, in terms of, like, you know, preserving the cultural heritage and background of British people and those high cultures of your ancestry and everything?
Yeah,
else?
I mean, when you look at human history in any culture, what I see is the same universal knowledge which was known way, way back, of course, coming forth through the generations and the cultures in different ways and in different expressions. But it's overwhelmingly the same knowledge. So one culture will call it this and they'll symbolize it like that. Another culture will call it this and they'll symbolize it like that. And these things are to be, you know, welcomed and to be, I hope, retained, because they're all part of the fantastic tapestry of human life and experience. So I try to come from the point of view as much as I can. I'm infinite awareness having this experience, but the experience itself is something of enormous value, and different experiences and sharing different experiences. But you know, I would also say this. People in Britain can point out what has happened and how it's systematically been done. But and I know again, it's not the American people; it's the people that have run the country. But you know, the Great British Empire wasn't very bloody great in my view. It exploited countries all over the world, as some of the other European, all the other European empires did. Of course, now we have an American empire, though they never say the word. And you know, a lot of people who've come to Britain in large numbers from around the world were given British passports by the British Empire to make sure they towed the line, because they're now part of the British Empire. I mean, you know, when you look at what Cecil Rhodes did in South Africa, Credo Mutwa, the Zulu shaman, has told me a lot of this stuff over the years. He would go in there representing the crown and the Rothschilds, and he would do what Kissinger did. Kissinger's shuttle diplomacy, when you tell one side one thing, another side another thing, and you set them to war with each other. And this is what Cecil Rhodes was doing. And when he played one tribe off against another, and another one of the tribes was now starting to really, get annihilated, he would then go to the chief and say, the only way that your tribe's going to survive is if you come under the protection of the British Empire. And to do that, of course, they had to give them the land, they had to give them the power, and then the troops came in and fought the other tribe. And this was going on all the time. And in this way, they took over South Africa. They took over Africa, basically, and they took over India. And you know, we also need to see that this has been a long term series of events that's led to where we are. And the British Empire has set the groundwork, set the process going, which has led to where we are now. And again, we are where we are now. We're not where we were 50 years ago or 100 years ago. We're where we are now. And we have to deal with where we are now. The only way of dealing with it, and to the point of boredom, I'm sorry, but this is the only way of dealing with it. There is no other way, is that we have to start to work together and get on. But to do that, we have to become conscious beyond the program. And I keep coming back to that, because if that does not happen, Henrik, nothing changes, and the program goes on ruling human perception. So it goes on dictating human society, and I say this to ethnic minorities as much as I say it to majorities in whatever country it is. People have got to start to get on, what we come back to is a simple word which could change everything: respect. Respect. If you go to another country, then have the respect not to impose your culture upon it. by all means, express your culture in your own lives, but don't seek to impose that culture so it becomes the dominant culture. Everyone wants to dominate everyone else, but not everyone, but vast numbers of people, they want to dominate. They're not happy with having a belief system. They need to have their belief system imposed upon everyone else. This is where all this converting to Islam comes from. You must convert or die. I mean, you're mad, mate. Yeah. But this is where it comes from. It's the lack of respect. You know, why can't someone, well, we know why, it's the program that makes people insane, literally. But why can't people of one religion or one faith or one culture just get on with another, enjoy their culture, express it, live it, another one does the same, and neither seeks to impose upon the other? Then we might have a chance. But it's this mentality: no, I'm right, therefore you must be wrong. And when you do the research and you go back to the origins of Allah and the origins of Yahweh and the origins of the Old Testament God, They're all the same origins, for goodness sake, but they don't do any of that research. They think they're all different, just as ISIS, not the ISIS core, but the ISIS rank and file think they're fighting the West. It's pathetic.
Yeah, exactly. No, I agree with you with the definitely with the Abrahamic religions aspect there as well. I think a lot of destruction has been made in that name, and I think that it wasn't and isn't a native, you know, culture to the European lands, at least, and that this has been kind of imposed a different mindset, really, and it was done partially through the aid of the Roman Empire and everything else. But no, you bring up a good point. I think that's one that needs to be discussed in terms of, you know, colonialism, because this is a huge issue that people point to as a reasoning of kind of why Britain and many other European countries kind of deserve of what is happening to them right now. And I think there's a couple of, you know, kind of both contradictions in that, but also recognitions in that we need to address and just briefly touch upon. And one, of course, is that if it is recognized to a certain extent that they need to be some kind of payment needs to be made back to Britain and whatnot, and that what is happening now is part of that with multiculturalism, well, then that's an admission of itself that multiculturalism isn't a good thing, and it's actually done because it's a punishment. And that in itself then kind of moots the point and shows the fact that, all right, so this is just done to kind of carry on the cycle of abuse. I'm not trying to rectify everything that the British Empire or any other European power did at the time, but we also have to recognize human nature and what kind of mindset this was part of in the past, because we have had fights over territories forever. The people have been enslaving each other forever. There's always been fights over resources. I think that the very environment that the West managed to bring forth is also the environment that at the end, kind of dismantled these issues. I mean, the West was the first to take the step towards ending slavery, for example. Yes, it was there in place, but this was universal. There was as much Irish and Scottish people enslaved and forcefully dragged over to the Americas as there were, people from West Africa. And again, it's like it's this extreme one-sidedness to the issue and history. And this is the kind of image we're getting from the academic environment specifically, where, you know, where cultural Marxism rule and kind of where political correctness and all the stuff kind of comes out of. And it's in that environment that they used these issues of history to shut down the debate. I mean, look at Britain. Yeah. They had a fantastic maritime empire like nothing else we've seen on the earth, and navy, which is, you know, glorious. Was everything they did right? No, but that's not the point. I mean, look at even the infrastructure that they managed to build in some of the other countries around the world, like in India. I mean, the great railways that the West laid in many regions of the world are still there, and they stood the test of time. Is there no value to these things? I mean, they didn't have millions of people pouring in. It was small enclaves that built up, yes, certain areas here and there, certain city structures that contributed to architecture, set up, you know, more advanced trading routes and things like that. And at the end of things, as we see it now, they pulled out. I guess if there's one large part of criticism I would make, it would be the meddling with, for example, how India and Pakistan was carved up. And I mean, that was one of the greatest crimes there. I think that they had cultures which was kind of fairly well intermingled, and they had a way of settling things, kind of how things were in Palestine before the, you know, imposition of Israel came onto the map there. But in Pakistan and India, that was carved up by the British and said, okay, Muslims go to this area, Pakistan, and India, you know, Hindus, you go down here. I mean, it was just called Hindustan in the beginning, and that was it, right? And when they did this carving up, millions of people were displaced, and they, you know, they had an idea of how they wanted to try to kind of order the world or structure it. And this is, of course, one of the big mistakes and follies that they did do. However, my questioning point here is that should we not look objectively at history and look at some of the contributions? And also at the same time, the law structure of Britain, for example, human rights, all these aspects are Western values that today are being touted by a lot of the minorities. And is this not worth protecting and saving this culture and environment that have brought these, you know, values to the forefront? And are the children today responsible for what their ancestors did? Do they have to carry the cross and the burden of something that they didn't have to do with? You know, so I think you bring out good points there, David, but it's definitely worth to look at this from all angles and try to be as fair as we can, because I see how this has been used to justify continuation of horrible crimes into our day today, and nothing is being done about it because, again, academia, this kind of cultural Marxist environment, and I think we need to recognize the issues that we're faced with here today.
Yeah, I'm not for a moment saying that people from today's generations should take the blame for what has happened in previous generations. And there's another rider to that in a second. What I was saying was that that set the process, which has led to where we are now. And the irony is that the families that are behind the global manipulation today are the same network of families that were behind the British Empire. They started the process going, and they've continued the process because they're the same force that's behind what Tony Blair's government did, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And they're behind political correctness. So, you know, what we've got here is this hidden hand that has created the sequence of what we call history, certainly in the times we're talking about. And the population have basically responded to that stimulus, responded to that direction. I would say about the British Empire is, you know, it imposed itself on country after country. Yes, it did some things with infrastructure and stuff like that. But you know, people should be left to run their own affairs, not have people with superior weapons walking in and taking over and saying, we're running the place now.
I agree. Yeah.
I don't care what the background is. It kind of sets a sequence in motion, which is where we've got to now. I mean, some of the, you know, things the British Empire did, I'm sure were very good with technology and stuff like that. But some of the things they did were absolutely beyond belief, appalling. Because the British Empire was not the empire of the British. This is the key thing. It was the empire of this cabal, which had located itself in Britain. And thus, you know, if you follow this network of bloodlines through history, wherever they plant their flag, an empire follows. So it was not the British Empire. This is the misnomer, which means that people say, well, it's the British, like the American. It's not. It's those controlling through Britain, just as the cabal now controls through America,
right,
that is actually dictating this. So, you know, it wasn't even a British Empire. It was a cabal empire. And America's today is a cabal empire and so on. And this is why if the people don't realize this, that so much of what we call countries, America, the governmental level of America and the governmental level of Britain are satellites of a global network. They are computer terminals on a global internet. They're not there to represent the country. They're there to represent the cabal within that country. And this is why the change has to come from people. There's no way that the Cameron government or the government that follows him, whatever, is going to do anything to sort this out, because he's there to make it worse.
Yeah.
This is the point.
Yeah.
And again, you know, when you look at this situation, you've got this cabal that's directing these sequences of events. You've got their representatives in government in the various countries perpetuating that sequence of events. And you've got, as a result of playing the program off against the program, you've got divide and rule among the populations down ethnic lines, religious lines, political lines, all of it. You know, from that perspective, you know, we've got a hell of a lot of sorting out to do. And it's got to come from the people, if you like, upwards, not it really is, because it's not going to come from governments, because they're satellites of the cabal. It's certainly not going to come from the cabal. We have to do it from the ground. And therefore, if we do not have an outbreak of consciousness across ethnic lines, then this cabal and the satellites of the cabal are going to go on pushing this sequence along. And we're nowhere near where it's planned to go. So it's a choice. It's a human choice. It's a choice to become conscious or stay programmed. And that choice will decide the future of this reality for a long time to come. And that choice is going to be made in the next few years.
All right. Yeah, we're going to wrap things up here in a little bit here, David. But No, it's interesting to watch as well. I mean, I've seen this idea in terms of how the ethnic consciousness, for example, is something that is encouraged among other groups, but not among, let's say, Brits or white Europeans or whatnot, which is the, again, I'm just exposing the double standards of it here, where, for example,
double standards are everywhere. I mean, yes, wherever you look, you see a double standard.
You have, for example, an encouragement of an ethnic-based consciousness within groups that come into the European countries, but then if white Europeans, even the idea that you feel pride over your people, I've had sort of people put that in quotation mark, and they're worried because I'm proud of being European. I want to see a European renaissance again and awakening people to the idea that Europe can be a great continent again, and we can throw off the shackles of the abuse that we've seen and everything else, and then that's a point of worry now. But for example, more of one ethnic group, they it's perfectly fine for them to encourage, their own culture and their own heredity, and they should. I encourage that. But if they do that, it should be, as you said, as you kind of opened the program with, it should be the same across the line. There should be an equality in the right to feeling the need or if you have that desire to preserve your own heritage or your own culture. And it's nothing to do with people, they run to these extremes because they want this to be the folly of the world. And as soon as you begin talk about that, they see swastikas and like SS troops marching and shit like that, it's nothing to do with supremacy. It's about the right of all people to preserve their heritage and culture and what they want to see in the world and how they want to live and with whom and everyone else. Right. So it's not an issue of hating others or putting others down or anything like that. It's just, it's a pride of the diversity of mankind across the board. Yeah, and when absolutely. I see that double standard, it just drives me nuts.
Diversity. Yeah. That's what consciousness is. We're all aspects of the same consciousness, but we're all unique aspects of the same consciousness. Thus, diversity is to celebrate the fact that we're all one consciousness, not to people think that when you talk about the unity of everything, that everything becomes one unified blob. No, becomes a celebration of all the diversity of possibility. If you can get arrested for calling somebody something and you get no comeback whatsoever, if you call somebody of another group the same, then there's something fundamentally wrong with the system. It's biased and it's rigged, and it's rigged on purpose. And when minorities realize that they are being played by on the same violin as everyone else, maybe we should we might have a chance then of turning our focus on who's playing the violin, because if we don't, then there's nothing that can be done. There's nothing that can be done unless we have an awakening of consciousness, a putting aside of the need to impose will upon others, and the realization that this world is run by a force that doesn't put itself on public display, and it is after everyone, not just middle class whites, not just Muslims, not just Hindus, everyone. And it's dividing and ruling us so it can achieve that end. And if that penny doesn't drop, then there's nowhere to go.
Yeah, it's the globalists, it's the elite, and so folks, don't fall for the pro-establishment kind of enforcement of the propaganda that they're seeking to do. And I mean, what you said before is on key with one-way tolerance that comes out of Herbert Marcuse, his essay of repressive tolerance out of the Frankfurt School, which kind of led to political correctness. That's the root of that, of constantly demonizing one side but then lifting up the other no matter what, and that also, of course, creates these massive double standards. But David, we'll wrap up here for now. I know you're busy, you have a lot to do, but let's continue and expose these kinds of situations, as we've seen in Rotherham, and no matter where it leads, look at the issues, dare to call a spade, and recognize it for what it is. David, leave us with your website. Please mention any books that you want to, and also talk about your upcoming talk at Wembley.
Oh, well, the website's davidicke.com. The last book is The Perception Deception, which if I never do anything else in my life, is the best thing I've ever done. Then I'm speaking all day at Wembley Arena on the 25th of October, connecting a vast number of dots over a vast number of subjects to show how they all fit together, and the pictures are very clear. It's interesting, just finally, Henrik, you talk there about repressive tolerance. Well, what repressive tolerance does is it works against natural tolerance. Because when you are enforcing something that is unjust, the people you're enforcing it upon tend to lose their natural tolerance that might well be there if you just left them alone.
Exactly. Yeah.
And tolerance, yes. But, you know, for me, when someone does something, I don't see the color of their skin. I don't see the name of their religion. I see the color of their character, as Martin Luther King put it. And we're in a point at the moment where the playing field is rigged, and while it's rigged, resentment is going to follow, which is exactly what it's meant to do.
All right, thank you for joining us, David. We appreciate it.
Cheers, Eric. See you soon.
All right. Well, I just have one more addition here I want to make to this before we wrap things up for this time. I think you'll come to a point when you realize what is at stake, and that what we're talking about here is ultimately survival. You either understand that the Europeans have been targeted for extinction, and that if you care about the preservation of human biodiversity, then you understand that this is on the same level as with any other people. In this case, though, we will have to lead this plight ourselves, since as far as I've been able to tell, at this stage, no one else really cares about us Europeans on the same level as Westerners have cared for other races or people when they have been targeted for genocide, such as with the Tibetans, or what occurred in Darfur, or in Rwanda, for example, just to mention a few. And although at least the last two, Darfur and Rwanda, is not on the same level, they were short-term, very violent and quick. The one we're talking about is long-term. It's drawn out. We've talked about this in endless amounts of program now about replacement-level migration and the declaration of the UN Code for Genocide, and that it actually fits within this paradigm too, although it's not an immediate and urgent one with the same level of urgent targeting. But nonetheless, it is occurring and it is happening. If you doubt that, please go back into our archives and listen to those programs that we've done there where we detail what actually is happening. But this is, you know, our interests, because it's in our interests. However you view the origins of man, if it's overnight creation or millions of years of evolution, I think that the wonderful expression of human life is something that we should carry forward into the future and not destroy it. Either you understand that or you don't. And I think you'll have to push through certain barriers that have been constructed for us to ensure that people kind of stay in this playpen. But we need to awaken to what is happening no matter what, no matter how hard it is to face the facts about this. And this is true for any people or any race. I consider that everyone has the right to preserve themselves, to ensure their survival, and that they can do what they need to do to survive in their own homelands. You know, it's pretty clear that multiculturalism is a big fat lie. It's designed to begin a process of weakening. And this is an essential step for them towards globalism and a one world culture. And I think it's something that needs to be resisted at every level. I mean, if you have that basic drive, basic understanding and psychological component lost, where your own people no longer means anything to you, when you no longer care about your own people or your own country, then this is going to be a cakewalk towards globalism. And you can't have it both ways. Either you have a global government or you do have nations. No matter how small they are, in my case, I think the smaller the better. Small enclaves or autonomous regions that govern themselves and decide for themselves how they want to live and peacefully interact and trade and whatnot with other, regions or nations. I don't like a power center 100 miles or 100 kilometers away from where you are. There is nothing in between here. You either have it or you don't. Either you govern yourself or someone else governs you. And I know what I personally prefer anyway. And, you know, a nation is the people. It's not the borders drawn on a map. This is what people don't get either. These are the only two options that we do have. And I mean, think about it. When the face of your nation begins to change, when you can no longer recognize your own people in the country that you're in, of course you're going to start losing that sense of nationhood and belonging and you know, cultural cohesion. That's just how it is, no matter if we like that or not. It's just something that we have to admit. And it doesn't mean that you necessarily hate other people or can't live with them or don't want to live with them or anything like that. It's just a simple biological reality of input of how it works. You either realize that you are in a country where your people who have helped to build that up over, you know, thousands of generations, or you realize that you have new people coming into it and it begins to change and they'll begin to alter the cultural cohesion. And I think many people will kind of fall out from that point. And that's an automatic response to the changing reality around you, that then you, all right, okay, I don't give a fuck about the country anymore. Then that's it. I really don't care about it. And why should I even care about my people, right? There's no cohesion there. There's no, maybe there's not even a reciprocal relationship anymore. Maybe people around you don't even speak the same language. Maybe it's starting to get difficult, not only on a cultural basis to understand each other, but even down to the language barriers and things like that. So this is a plan. It's a plan to, you know, destroy those things that have stood in the way of globalism. And I think it's a sly and it's a awful, awful strategy to perform towards any people anywhere in the world. And I think that Swedes, for example, have as much right to preserve themselves as, let's say, the Kurds do, or as the Tibetans did when the Chinese sent in millions of immigrants to weaken and destroy the Tibetans. And I don't understand why people get that, but they do not get it on a level when it comes to, for example, the Norwegians or the Danes or the Swedes. These are true minorities in the world, folks. Pakistan is, what, 180 million strong, as I mentioned. And there's about 4 million Norwegians in the world. There's about 8 million native Swedes. And yet, despite the size, Sweden has helped the Kurds, for example. We've been tremendously generous and helpful when it comes to helping other people. And that's fantastic. I both admire and encourage that assistance that we've given to other people. And I hope one day that the Kurds can return back to their own country and live in their own homeland once again in peace and prosperity. But you see, we are allowed to protect others, but we're not allowed to protect ourselves. And why is that? It's insanity. Either you understand where this is going or you don't. And this is something that's happening in reality, on the ground, in the physical, right in front of your eyes. It couldn't be more obvious. You don't have to, you know, go to another level to, you know, to explain it, although people do that too, and that's perfectly fine. But you don't have to. That's what I'm saying. You know, people fight for birds when they are endangered. They fight for their path of land. People are conservationists when it fits, and they are not when it fits. But, you know, just one more point on the British people here as well and British history. Everything that has been done in its name might not always have been right, but two wrongs don't make a right. To target the current British people, you know, for the skewed and very anti-Western arguments that come through in academia is not right. To ignore the tremendous achievements and extraordinary feats that this small country have produced, you know, just think about the explorers, the naturalists, the geographers cataloging the species of our world. The British Natural History Museum is a true wonder of the world. You know, even what we've learned about the Earth and the globe through all the expeditions, we would have had a very limited knowledge of the world today if it wasn't for the British people and everything they did. So to single them out, or any other people for that matter, for something that has been part of human nature and human history, that is a crime. There's not one race of people on this planet that have not enslaved others in some capacity or other. And in fact, I have to push back and press this point and issue again. Who was it that first actually began to emancipate the slaves and end this age-old institution? You know, how were the British people subjected by the Romans, for example? I mean, there's tons of waves and waves of this in history, and to continue and carry it forward is not, it's not right. I suggest that people pick up an honest history book prior to the PC age of, what, 1940s or something like that, instead of watching Hollywood productions like Master and Commander that is solely designed to reinforce those kinds of stereotypes that have been tremendously exaggerated. It's ultimately coming out of the academic world, that type of environment, and it's done to justify what we're seeing in the world today, and so that you inherently won't do anything about it because you think it's some kind of reparation or it's the right thing to do. But in reality, if you're honest and looking at this objectively, it's just a continuation of the crime. So let's stop it. Let's cease the cycle of abuse, shall we? Anyway, we'll be back with more in just a few days. Much more is coming up. We'll continue to question, we'll continue to examine, investigate, and look into many other problems that we do face. We have Nora Goodgaudas, David Eberhard, Mike King, also the guys from JoyCamp, Tom Goodrich, John Nugent, Frank Salter, Kai Murrows, and many more are coming on the program as well. Thank you for listening and for considering. We'll talk to you soon. Take good care, and please stay safe. Bye-bye. This girl I know needs some shelter, but she don't believe anyone can help her. She's doing so much harm, doing so much damage, but you don't want to get involved. You tell her she can't manage, and you can't change the way she feels, but you could put your arms around.
Change the way you feel, but I could put my